New Mexico's unemployment rate has passed the national unemployment rate. In July, it jumped to 12.7%. Nationwide in July, the unemployment rate was 10.2%. And now, New Mexicans are not getting any additional federal benefits.
You know, it was one thing when the federal government was subsidizing unemployment to the tune of $600 a week. Now that that's not happening, we're really expecting this to just be a pylon. It's going to be very, very dire.
Workforce Solutions Secretary Bill McCamley joins us today to talk about the issues New Mexicans continue to face when it comes to unemployment and how his office is responding to the crisis. We'll begin right after NPR News on KRWG Public Media. Good afternoon. It is 1:06 and time for Voice of the Public on KRWG Public Media. This is Casey Counts, and this afternoon we are joined by Workforce Solutions Secretary Bill McCamley, who is going to spend the next hour with us talking about the challenges that remain that New Mexicans continue to face, what changes we have seen throughout the course of this pandemic, and what the future holds. The telephone number to call is 575-646-2212. That's 646-2212. But I do want to make sure that everyone understands that we can't address anyone's individual case today. There are thousands and thousands of people that are struggling to get their situations under control, and we simply can't address all of those during the course of what will be a very short hour here today. So with that being said, welcome to KRWG, Bill.
Thank you very much for having me, Casey.
We're so glad you're here, and there is so much territory to cover today. And while we did announce that we can't address people's individual challenges that they're, you know, facing with their own cases, I do want to address what those issues are so that we can talk to those folks, you know, as a whole and acknowledge what they're going through.
Sure. And I think the, if it's okay with you, I had some points I really wanted to bring up, at least to start, that are really important. And the first one is that this is all about the virus. The economic situation has been caused by the virus, and we absolutely have to get it under control and keep it under control before we can really successfully work to reopen the economy and get people back off unemployment and back into the job force. And that means wearing a mask. That means socially distancing. That means Labor Day is upcoming. Don't go to parties. Don't go around other folks without a mask in situations where the virus can spread. The more we continue to do these things that keep us safe, the more we can get the virus under control and get people back to work. As an example, as you saw yesterday, we've been doing better in the state of New Mexico and a lot of different places. And the governor came out with a new public health order that allows restaurants to open 25% of their indoor dining. I know that's been a big controversial issue pretty much everywhere in the state, but I'm from Cruces. I was down there a couple weeks ago. I know that this is a real issue everywhere and with a lot of folks. Because people have been doing better, because we've been following those rules and keeping the spread down, first of all, there's less people getting sick. Hospitalizations are down, and that means we can start to, as the governor says, take more risk. That allows some people to get back to work. Furthermore, some schools are going to be able to think about if they're in a county which is showing decent results, right, where you don't have a lot of folks that are testing positive as a percentage of the overall test, and you have an overall case count that is fairly low, to start opening, if they want to, hybrid models of schooling. And that's really, really important for unemployment, because what we find is one of the biggest roadblocks for people going back to work in a lot of cases are their parents of children, and finding ways of getting childcare has been a challenge. One in five Americans on unemployment is actually a single parent. And there's actually a higher percentage of New Mexicans by about 2 points than the nation as a whole. So that's huge. I want to address your introduction where you talked about New Mexico and 12% unemployment. That is true. But I will say that that increase that you saw from June to July is not really a reflection of more people that are quote-unquote unemployed. The way that percentage is calculated is through a survey that the National Bureau of Labor Statistics does with people. And what people were saying for a long time, and you saw this in May and April with the national numbers, is that they didn't consider themselves unemployed. They considered themselves temporarily furloughed. And as this thing has unfortunately dragged on, because the pandemic hasn't really gotten under control here, people have started saying, hey, I'm going to start looking for new opportunities and new work. Mm-hmm. And that's really why that's gone up. And the last thing I'd really like to say is that this is an opportunity, if people want to think about it, to say, all right, we know what the jobs are going to be in New Mexico until 2028. We know that there will be openings in healthcare, from nursing assistants all the way to doctors. We know that there will be a need for teachers at the early childhood, elementary, middle, and high school levels, especially if you want to teach special ed, you are bilingual, or you're a STEM teacher. And we know that there will be jobs for computer specialists in the IT field, for anyone in the STEM fields, especially engineers. And we know there's going to be construction jobs. If you are in a position where you may not see your job coming back, we are trying to find ways of giving people information and resources so that they can take this opportunity if they wish to go back to school. There was a national effort at this. We really didn't like the approach because it was, we felt it was a little insensitive to where people are at because this is so hard right now and we want to recognize how hard it is. But if you want to use this as an opportunity, and go back to NMSU or Doña Ana, go to NMSU Alamogordo, go back to Western if you're up in Grant County, Luna County, this can be an opportunity if you want to go into healthcare or IT or you want to become a teacher to reskill yourself and be able to get a job for the next 10 years. And that's a really, really important message that we want to make sure is out there.
What kind of help is available for people to do that?
Right. So we actually did a town hall on this with the president of Western New Mexico, the president of Santa Fe Community College. And this is actually a really helpful thing for your folks who are interested in this topic as a whole. If you go to youtube.com/NMDWS, New Mexico Department of Workforce Solutions, that is youtube.com/NMDWS, we have tried very, very hard to put a lot of informational videos out regarding a whole range of subjects. As an example, when we first started seeing this massive rise in unemployment claims in March and April, we put out a video on how to apply online and how to certify. We did the same thing for self-employed folks in May when that process came out. And what we've been doing over the summer, and now we're going to be into the fall, is having town halls on things like COVID-safe practices. We actually found that one of the biggest roadblocks other than childcare was people being scared to go back to work. And in fact, in the Las Cruces Sun News today, you saw a story about chili farmers and chili pickers actually worrying about their health. And it's not just them. A lot of these folks live in a family environment where they're worried about infecting loved ones. And so making sure that employers are following these COVID-safe practices is absolutely vital to getting workers to feel confident to come back. But we also did a town hall a couple weeks ago on higher education. And there's a lot of information on there on the type of financial aid that is available, including the new state opportunity scholarship, as well as the processes you need to go through to apply and get any of these classes. So I would really encourage people, if you're interested or know anybody who's interested, to go to that resource and check that out. Because one thing I've found in this job, especially as COVID has become a focus, is that communication is absolutely important, and we've tried everything we can to communicate in as simple and as clear a way as we can about these issues.
575-646-2212. If you have a question today for Workforce Solutions Secretary Bill McCamley, unemployment, our topic. And I'm wondering, Bill, if you're starting to get a sense or if there are any trends in terms of understanding what kinds of jobs might not be coming back.
Casey, that's actually a really interesting question. Let me give you an example of where this might go. In our office, because the governor really wanted to keep state employees safe, we scrambled like crazy through the last week of March and the first couple weeks of April to get as many people as we could teleworking in our department. So it was a challenge. We had to deal with this massive increase in claims and calls and everything else while getting our people out of the office. But what we found is that a lot of people actually like working from home, and it doesn't really stop their ability to do their job. And so as more and more people discover this new method of work and how effective it can be, you may see less need in the future for physical space, for offices. So that may be an area where some jobs kind of transition to other things. And that'll be a really, really interesting thing looking forward. And as you see those types of things happening, you're going to see jobs in other areas open up. What does that look like? We're still not quite sure yet, but we do know, we absolutely know, that there will be a need for healthcare workers, and that wasn't obvious before. It sure as heck is now. We're going to have a need for engineers and IT people. I mean, everyone's doing all their meetings now by Zoom and WebEx and all these other online forums, and so you need internet security people. You're going to need teachers. New Mexico already had a workforce that was getting a little bit older. And if it wasn't apparent now, the job of teaching is so needed, and a lot of parents really understand that probably more than they ever have, as a lot of them are trying to work from home and deal with their kids at home. That's why we're going to need really good teachers, and we definitely are going to need construction folks. So if you're interested in going out and being an apprentice and learning how to be a carpenter or a plumber or a pipe fitter, you can actually go and earn while you learn and end up making really, really good money. And so these options are all out there, and it's really important for people to understand this can be an opportunity if people can get the resources needed to take advantage of it. And that's what we're trying to do.
And I want to address briefly, what are people still finding? I mean, I know that folks are still hitting roadblocks as they're trying to get through this process. Why don't you give us a picture of what it is that people are really experiencing and how your office is working to fix those problems and get things to where they're operating as efficiently as possible?
Sure. So the biggest savior for us in terms of being able to weather the crisis with all the challenges we've had, but even to get through it where we're at now, has been our website. Our IT staff has been really busting their tails to make sure that our website never goes down and stays running smoothly. And in March and April, you had a lot of states where either the websites would completely crash or people were actually encouraging claimants to go on and file their claims at 3 a.m. We never had that issue. And 95% of the people that file claims for unemployment both not only use the website to do their initial claims, but also to do their weekly certifications. And so we're really happy about that. And we absolutely encourage people, if you can, to use the web resource. It is pretty simple to understand. It's fast. And like I said, we have these internet tutorials on YouTube, youtube.com/NMDWS, that walk you through step by step how to file a claim, how to do certifications. We're also going to be putting one up shortly, I think next week, on how to use our job search site. So Workforce Solutions Department isn't just the unemployment office. Our job is to try to get you a job as well. And we have probably the most complete job search site in the state because the term is called Spider, all the other websites. So if you're on Indeed and Glassdoor or Monster, whatever, we take the job postings that are on those sites and put it onto our website. And so we encourage people to use these online resources as much as possible. Now, you asked about some of the roadblocks. Number one is just the volume of people that are on the system. You know, we've definitely hired more folks. We were borrowing people from other state agencies to help us through the really tough time that we were going through in March, April, May, and June. those folks have had to go back to their own jobs. And I'll give you an example. The Human Services Department, we had at our height about 70 people from the Human Services Department helping us with unemployment. However, August is their big month for people filing for SNAP benefits. And obviously there's going to be a lot more people filing for those this year than there were in previous years. So they had to kind of go back. So juggling staff, trying to get new staff on, has been a little bit of a challenge. One of the things that helped actually with that, though, is that for our call center folks, because we have this work-at-home model, we've been able to hire people from around the state. In our last round, I think we hired about 24 people. I think six or seven of them were from Doniana County. And so they're able to work from home. So our call center is in Albuquerque, but you don't have to be in Albuquerque anymore to work for our call center because you can do it from wherever you're at as long as you can go through the training and get on a phone with a quiet place in your house. In terms of the other challenges, obviously the virus has been a massive challenge. And you've seen other countries around the world, frankly, have a better national strategy for dealing with the situation, and they are able to get people back to work faster. And we're unfortunately not in that situation right now. That's been a huge challenge. And it would have been very helpful for the national government to have a more complete and thorough strategy for helping to deal with the virus. And, you know, the governor's been very clear on that. And it reflects in our unemployment numbers. The faster we get control of the virus, the more we can get people back to work. I'd say the last challenge is that once we got through the very, very high volume of people that were applying right away in March, April, beginning of May with the self-employed program, the simpler issues, once people get through, can kind of be taken care of. What we've got now is a situation where the folks that are still having problems a lot of times have very, very complicated issues they've got to deal with. They might have a pension. They might have wages from two or three states, but we have to verify those things. Those types of issues take time, and they take a lot of resources to kind of work through. You know, this system, not the IT system, but the unemployment system as a whole, was invented in the 30s for a economic situation that is not the same almost 100 years later. You know, back in the 30s, most people worked for a decent amount of time for one company, and when they got unemployment, it was a fairly simple process to get in. And the people that still have that kind of model generally find getting into unemployment easier. The trick is there's a lot of people now who are working as a part-time worker 20 hours a week and then, you know, do a side hustle with Uber on the weekends or work for their cousin's yoga studio, or they've had four or five part-time jobs and kind of made them work over the past 18 months. And as more and more people have gotten into these more complicated work situations, it puts a lot more burden on the unemployment system because we have to verify all those wages, make sure all those numbers are right, and it creates a lot harder of a situation.
In fact, one email that we got before we went to air today was from someone who has not received payments yet and has filed for an appeal. And, you know, they can't even, you know, get that until November 10th. And so I wanted to spend a little bit of time talking about the appeals process.
Sure. So if there's a couple of things that come up over and over why people might be denied or might not get as much as they want. The first issue is what is called separations. And this is another issue we really trying to deal with at unemployment. We have a language inside the department where it's all lingo, and I'm sure every person at any kind of work has their own jargon they have. The problem sometimes is our people use that jargon talking with people that don't understand it. So let me try to put this into English. If you're at a job, you are generally not allowed to get unemployment if you quit. So most people that get unemployment get it because they are laid off. The employer made the decision to let you go. If you quit and you file for unemployment, you have to provide what is called a good cause to be able to get your benefits. Now, in non-COVID times, these are things like, I have an abusive employer, or they're changing the conditions of my job, so they want me to go work at another office across town, and I may not have transportation. that sort of thing. So in COVID times, we've actually expanded that a little bit to say, if you can actually show that your employer is not meeting these COVID safe practices, there's no effort to make people wear masks, there's no social distancing, there's no hand sanitizer, hand washing facilities available, et cetera, and so on, and you can show that, then that might be good cause. Another thing is pre-existing conditions. So the state epidemiologist gave us a bunch of health conditions that are important, because if you have them and you're in a situation where you get exposed to COVID, you're at a much higher risk of having a much worse result. So people with severe asthma, people who have undergone cancer treatment, people with diabetes, et cetera, and so on. So if you can show medical documentation from a provider that you're a high-risk medical person, then you can say, hey, that's good cause. But that's one of the issues that, for instance, if our investigators make a decision that a person left their job without good cause and they disagree, they can appeal. We have an appeals tribunal with judges that can hear issues like that. And unfortunately now, because of the volume, our appeals tribunal, we had hired some more people on there, but it is backing up. And unfortunately, that's kind of the situation we find ourselves in. I am actually not allowed to talk about any specific issues, because if people don't like what the appeals tribunal judge says, they can appeal to me. And so I probably do a few hundred of those every week myself. But because it's a judicial process, I'm not actually allowed to see any of the evidence for or against any of these appeals beforehand, before I kind of make a signature on there. But we did just hire two more people for the appeals tribunal. They started on Monday. We are in the process of trying to hire three more. And, you know, if we can't get a hold on the backlog, we might hire more. So one of the things that you talked about in terms of things creating issues for us is personnel. It takes a good 5 weeks to train someone up to be on our phone lines to be a customer service agent. As you can probably tell from these issues, they get kind of complicated, and there's a lot of nuance involved in them. And just to figure out how to get someone trained up to do an application and a certification takes a week. These other things take a lot longer. It takes a good few weeks, probably 2 months total, to train someone up to be an appeals tribunal judge. And so as we've hired more people, which we really have, the problem is there's a lag into when they can start helping with a lot of these volume issues that we're talking about. But we're working through it. And I will say this, I'm very, very proud of the staff. I'm so proud of the staff at Department of Workforce Solutions. We are generally at about a 93% payment rate for anybody in our system that we are allowed to give money to. So for people that are waiting on what we call adjudication, so as we're processing these type of issues as they're going through, it has stayed fairly steady since the middle of April. We've been able to get through a lot of folks into payment situations a lot faster than other states. We just hit the $2 billion mark this week for money that has been distributed to New Mexicans through all these unemployment programs we're running. And so that's a pretty impressive number, considering you've got about 2 million people in the state as a whole. And then with new programs being rolled out, we've had a fairly successful track record of getting new programs rolled out so we can get money in people's pockets as fast as we can. Now, it sure as hell hasn't been perfect, and there have been issues. But we've been top tier in a lot of these categories nationwide over the span of the last 5 months. So I'm really, really proud of the work the people in our department have done to help people as much as they can.
Now, 575-646-2212, the number to call if you'd like to ask a question. Bill McCamley, Workforce Solutions Secretary, on the line with us to spend the next half hour now. And before we let any more time go by, I do want to address the federal benefit that went away. And we have yet to have an agreement in Congress, but we did have the president write an executive order that said that he would offer $300 in federal money if states would pay an additional 25%. And I understand states are trying to get that money, but without paying the additional $100, right, per person. Where are we on that?
Yeah, so we actually got approved for that program. We were the first state in the country to submit an application for that program. And I think that really shows the ability of our governor to look past partisan issues when there are ways of getting new tools to help New Mexicans. And I'm really, really proud of Governor Lujan Grisham for working with us to be the first state in the country to make that application. Obviously, there's a rather large disagreement between the governor and people in the administration and some of the folks at the presidential level, but the tools out there, New Mexicans need help, and we were on the ball getting the application in. We received funds for 3 weeks, so let's be real clear with this program. The first week that you can be eligible for it as an unemployment claimant is for the week ending August 1st. And so we received 3 weeks of funding, so August 1st, August 8th, and August 15th is what we have in the bank. We did apply for a fourth week, so that's the week ending the 22nd. We have not received a disbursement for that yet. So, but we're pretty sure we're going to get a fourth week. So basically, if you were on the program any of those weeks and you certified for your unemployment claim, starting next week, we should be able to get you that money. Now, on the 6th of September, for those people with accounts, you're going to see on your certification page just one more question asking whether you have been specifically affected by COVID, and if that's the reason that you're either unemployed or partially unemployed. All you got to do is hit yes on that, go through your regular process, takes only a few minutes, and what we'll start doing is during that week, we will start dispersing the money in batches because we've got, you know, over 100,000 people that are going to be getting this money. And it'll mostly come in a chunk. Now, there's two caveats to this. The first is the presidential staff made a decision that anybody who has under $100 in what is called their weekly benefit amount is not eligible for this. Don't ask me why. I have no idea. We were not given a reason. There's about 2,000 New Mexicans that have between $87 and $100 a week as their weekly benefit amount. And unfortunately, we're not going to be able to get them any money because the president decided that they weren't going to get any. The second caveat is we don't know how long this is going to last. So this money comes from FEMA, Federal Emergency Management Association, and it's normally set up to go to victims of hurricanes and fires and things like that. And so they've capped it at $44 billion for the nation as a whole. We've heard that the program will extend anywhere from 4 and 7 weeks. We just have no idea how long it's going to go, and we have to apply every week to see if there's going to be money left. So we'll see how it is moving forward, but we are applying for as much money as we can get, and we'll get as many dollars into the pockets of New Mexicans as we possibly can.
I don't imagine you have a crystal ball to tell us what we're expecting from Congress at this point.
No, I'm sorry. I honestly don't know. I do hope, though, that Congress does something. The governor has been very concrete about this, and I agree with her that the best solution to this scenario is a comprehensive package that not only includes money for unemployment, but includes money for our frontline healthcare workers. Those people are out there risking their tails every single day to keep people safe. Includes money to open our schools up safely. Includes money for state and local governments who are experiencing real hard times in making sure they get revenues in so they can do all the services that all of us rely on. I'm talking garbage, water, police and fire. All those things are really necessary. And here's the deal. The reason that's important is because it's all linked together, right? The more we can open up our schools safely, the more childcare becomes less of an issue and some single parents can get back to work. And if we can do that without spreading the virus and keep the risk to our teachers low, that's a huge help to get people off unemployment. The more we can help our frontline healthcare workers and make sure they have the resources they need to do their job safely, the more the numbers overall can come down, and we can open up more restaurants, maybe start having some mass gatherings again. Whatever that turns out to be, that will allow more people to go back to work. This isn't just a fantasy scenario. We can open up the economy and everything's going to be fine. Let me be very clear about this. The Washington Post in July did a very, very intense study of the economies of both New Mexico and Arizona over the course of April through July. And if you remember, what happened was the governor of Arizona decided to pretty much open everything up in the beginning, middle of May, somewhere mm-hmm. in there. I'm talking barbershops, gyms, restaurants, bars, water parks, the whole shebang.
Yeah.
And yeah, a lot more people went back to work, a lot more of the economy started kind of showing life. But what happened? Virus goes and spreads. And you get a lot more people get sick, you get a lot more people go to the hospital, and unfortunately you had a lot more people dying. And so the governor, seeing this scenario where his hospitals were filling up, and they were bringing in refrigerated trailers into Phoenix because the morgues were full, he had to start closing things down again. And so what happened? By July, the economic output per capita for Arizona was almost exactly the same as where New Mexico is. And they had three times more dead people. So there's no change here. We got to get the virus under control. And the more we do that successfully, the more we can open up the economy on a long-term basis where we don't yo-yo all the time and we can get people off unemployment permanently.
And while it wasn't, I guess, part of that study, but you can look to similar circumstances in Texas. We know that throughout the course of this time, you know, the governor has had a mandate for self-quarantining for people that are coming in from other states. I don't know how successful that has really been, but we just had a pretty big outbreak of the virus at the McDonald's in Ruidoso. For people who are caught up in a situation like that, let's say, you know, maybe they have the virus asymptomatic, but they have to stay away for a while. Are they candidates for unemployment, or do they have a different scenario going on?
Yeah, they are not, but there was another federal bill that got passed in the middle of March called the Families First Coronavirus Act. And in that bill, there is a provision where if you have to quarantine because a medical provider says so, you are supposed to be able to get 2 weeks of paid benefits from your employer because you were exposed to the virus or whatever. So, yeah, that's not really an unemployment issue. That is a paid leave issue under this separate bill. But unfortunately, we do not enforce that law. That is forced by the federal Department of Labor. But for people who are interested in that, I would encourage you to go to Google, just type in Families First, paid family leave or paid sick leave, and you can get all the details on that program.
All right, very well. Let's make sure everyone has, if they want to visit the website, call the phone number. You know, I know that people who are having to do that on a daily basis or a weekly basis are already equipped. But for anyone who's maybe finding themselves in this situation newly, give us those tools.
Sure. So our website for the unemployment system is jobs.state.nm.us. That is jobs.state.nm.us, right? And if you really want to get some good information on or how to use that website, please go to our YouTube site, youtube.com/NMDWS. That is youtube.com/NMDWS. And we, Casey, I know I'm saying this over and over again, but we really encourage people, if they can, to use the website. It's tough because a lot of people that call us, they are just wanting to talk to somebody. Like they,
right.
This is what we found actually quite a bit, is that people just want someone to talk to them. You know, they're home all day, they're scared. They don't know what to do. They just want someone to tell them it's going to be okay. And so they call our 877 number, and we get a lot of people on the phone lines where if you're interested in using our web resources, a lot of times you can just get that done and get it taken care of, and it works. Like I said, 95% of the folks that apply and do their weekly certifications use jobs.state.nm.us for their services. Now, I will say, if you need to call, the number is 877-664-6984. And the best days to call are Thursday and Friday. Monday is the day when you're going to have the hardest time trying to get through, because some people still insist on doing their weekly certifications by phone, and they call in right at 7 o'clock when we open the call center on Monday morning. And then there's a lot of other people who think about things over the weekend and get really energetic, and then they call in. What we find is that we get about double or triple the phone calls on Monday that we do on probably triple the phone calls on Monday that we get on Friday. So if you really want to try to get a hold of our call center and help get your questions answered Friday, Thursdays and Fridays are the best days to call. But once again, jobs.state.nm.us, youtube.com/NMDWS are the online resources where you can probably find answers to 90% of your questions.
All right. Something you've touched on a couple of times already this hour, but that I wanted to get a little bit more into depth on is the reopening plan for schools. We heard yesterday from the Secretary of Education, Ryan Stewart, talking a little bit about how our schools, elementary schools, could start reopening on a hybrid model after Labor Day, as long as their county shows the correct numbers in terms of the spread of the virus. Now, under the current scenario, I think Doniana County would be among the counties that could start that hybrid reopening today. We heard from Las Cruces Public Schools that Fair Acres Elementary has had to close to staff because they have had they had one employee test positive a week ago, and now three more today. So, earlier on, I was thinking, yeah, it's been like two steps forward, one step back along the way, just because, as you mentioned, we're introducing this risk. And, I know I can't imagine what it's like to be, especially a single working parent in this situation. And I want to address, you know, some of the resources that are out there for them in terms of, you know, childcare. I know that was one of the items that we wanted to be sure to dig into today.
Yeah, so that's probably a more appropriate question for the Secretary of Early Childhood Education, Elizabeth Griginski, but I actually just had a phone call with her yesterday, and they are working on some new regulations and guidelines, which will hopefully be out soon. And once they get that, we talked about doing one of these town halls where we get on with a bunch of smart people and hopefully have them answer questions that people have. We actually did one of those a couple of weeks ago about housing, which is really important because there's a lot of folks out there right now that if they're losing that extra $600 a month, even with this extra $300 that may be coming in, it's tough. And there are resources out there for people who are in this situation and can use them to get rental assistance. And we actually had Nicole Martinez from Community of Hope in Doniana County, who, by the way, Nicole Martinez is a saint, and there should be words before that. But she is probably one of the best people that I know in life. And she is intelligent, she works her ass off, and she has helped so many people in the Las Cruces and Doniana area who are homeless get into homes and who are in homes worried about the situation prevent them getting kicked out. So she was on our call talking about a lot of the resources that may be available in your areas. We also had a UNM law professor named Serge Martinez who talked about some of the legal issues that come up if you are served with an eviction order, because the Supreme Court of the United States, the Supreme Court of New Mexico has put in a moratorium on evictions during this pandemic. So if you get an eviction notice, you still got to show up to court, and you got to prove to a judge that you don't have the ability to pay your rent. But if you do that, then judges shouldn't be evicting you right now. There's also help with utilities, and Las Cruces has been one of the best cities in the state dealing with utility issues. They set up a whole fund. Gabe Vasquez is my city councilor. I know he was very, very involved in this program, and he just did a wonderful job helping really push this fund that got set up using some of the foundation dollars they have to give people help if they can't pay their city utilities. And so the message on this, though, is that please ask for help. As soon as you know you're in a situation with housing, start asking right now. Talk to your landlord, see if you can negotiate something. Talk to these folks who can give you some rental assistance. As soon as you get an eviction notice, try to get a hold of the court and get an appointment right away, that sort of thing. In terms of childcare, we want to have the same kind of town hall where we get people on that are really, really smart that can talk about a lot of the resources that are out there for people to use. And if you don't know what kind of subsidies you can get, what kind of childcare is available in your community, we want to really be able to make that available to folks and answer questions. But once again, the housing town hall is available at youtube.com/NMDWS. with Las Cruces' own Nicole Martinez and UNM Law Professor Serge Martinez. And we will hopefully be trying to do one for early childhood as soon as we can.
We want to thank everyone for listening today, whether you're listening on the radio or streaming us at krwg.org or watching the Facebook live stream. You can also participate there, by the way, if you have comments or questions. We're monitoring that as well. 575-646-2212, though, the number to call today while we have Workforce Solutions Secretary Bill McCamley on the line. And we did address early on that we couldn't necessarily deal with everyone's personal situations because, you know, we would, of course, spend the whole hour talking to the thousands and thousands of people about the issues that they're having dealing with this situation. And we were just a report came out this week from the Accountability Office of the legislature showing that the comparison, if you will, of this situation to the Great Recession in 2009, and it's six times as many people who have filed for unemployment. And obviously, such different circumstances. But give us an idea of what the long run looks like, Bill, if you can.
It's going to be a challenge. I mean, there's no sugarcoating the situation. Our economist at the Workforce Solutions Department is very, very good at what she does. And her assessment is that once people get on unemployment, it takes a while for them to get off. And that's especially true in New Mexico, where we tend to lag behind national indicators. Now, usually, that's a decent thing sometimes in recessions because the oil and gas industry, the large amount of federal jobs we have in the state tends to cushion us a little bit from national recessions. As an example, during the Great Recession, you had a situation where people in Nevada, people in Colorado were getting, you know, double-digit unemployment levels, and we never quite got there. The problem is because we rely on these jobs and because we're very highly reliant also on tourism and some of the lower-income jobs, that it's harder for us to rebound and rebound to the extent that during really good times, we sometimes lag behind in the unemployment rate. And I think that's why, and the governor is very clear about this plan, and I agree with her, it is so important that we have to diversify the state's economy. That's why areas like border trade down in Santa Teresa is vastly important. When that gets cranked up again, can that be an area of job growth that will let us be more diverse? That's why the development of the spaceport, Virgin Galactic, all those folks, I know that there was just a big announcement where they're going to hire some new call center folks and hire new people that are going to be involved with the spaceport. Building up those different kinds of electronic home giver. Everyone sees downtown Las Cruces, that electronic home giver business. I mean, they choose to locate in downtown Las Cruces. They really do a good job with the bank building. And they're employing a bunch of IT and tech people from NMSU to come work in Las Cruces. Those are the sorts of efforts that we absolutely have to focus on. And we got to get back on this horse, you know, when we get this pandemic under control and really put our noses to the road and work hard to develop them, because we don't want to just rely on one or two areas of the economy to do well, because, you know, when tourism goes away in a situation like this, a lot of people get hurt and we don't have a lot of other jobs for people to get.
Obviously, hospitality industry, you know, the most affected, and that certainly is no surprise. Is there any indication at this point as to how robust that whole industry, that whole industry's recovery might be? Any indications at this point?
We don't really know yet. And I will say this, though, it's going to depend on people. It's going to depend on the actions of individual New Mexicans. And here's the thing, and the governor talked about this in a press conference yesterday, and I talked about it on a little video I did the other day. When you go into a restaurant, because they're going to have indoor dining tomorrow, don't just rip your mask off and pretend like there's no COVID around as soon as you're in the door. Please keep your mask on until you get seated. And when you're dealing with your server, like a lot of these servers, they're putting themselves in harm's way because they really want to work. Masks are about protecting everybody around you. So the more you can wear a mask when you're interacting with them, the more you can keep your mask on when you're not eating and drinking, the more the virus doesn't spread and the more we can continue to allow for more activities. You know, it was really interesting. There was a study done by JP Morgan in, I think it was June, where they were looking at how people spent their money on Chase credit cards. And they could basically predict where there was going to be a COVID outbreak by the amount of money people were spending in restaurants versus grocery stores. The more money a community spent in a grocery store, the less chance of a COVID outbreak. The more money that was spent on restaurants, the more chance of a COVID outbreak. And so we love our restaurants. Mm-hmm. You know, we want to support our restaurateurs, and we want to make sure they have the ability to keep going. But that ability is going to depend on the virus, and controlling that virus is completely up to us. And the more we take these rules seriously, and this is the other real problem. For some reason, masks have become political, and they shouldn't be. It's a piece of cloth you put on your face to keep water droplets from coming out of your air, or coming out of your mouth. The less water droplets that get in the air, the less chance of spreading COVID. That's it. That's it. The more we wear a mask, the more we show a care for our servers in the restaurant. The more we show our care for our first responders and our healthcare workers. The more we show our care for our teachers and our kids, because the more we bring this down, you know, the less chance they're likely to get it. So I just think that's going to be up to us. How well we open up our hospitality and tourism market, how big we open up, will depend on the actions of New Mexicans. And if we all do the right thing, we can keep it up.
You mentioned people out there, you know, putting themselves at risk to do their jobs. And we did have a caller who didn't want to be on the air, but asked about the proposal of what we might call hazard pay for essential workers. And we've heard, you know, that talked about here and there, but I don't know if it's never really come to fruition, has it?
Not that I'm aware of. I know that there was a provision for that in the Federal Heroes Act that was passed by the House of Representatives back in May. That was basically the Democrats in the House, their kind of bargaining position for a comprehensive bill. It never got brought up in Congress. And so, unfortunately, as of now, we don't have that. This administration absolutely supports that effort because we recognize our frontline healthcare workers, our grocery store workers, all those folks that are out there that are quote unquote essential, that have to be in a situation where they're interacting with people every day. And that's not easy. And some of those folks don't get paid very much, and yet they're taking the risk. So we absolutely support that concept and really are hoping Congress can get together and get a comprehensive bill passed.
One of the interesting things early on was that $600 a week in federal money put some people over what they were making when they were working. And so then it was discussed as to whether this was some kind of disincentive for people to go back to work. Obviously, in the current situation, it's not an issue anymore. But what were your thoughts on that?
Well, frankly, Casey, the data and numbers simply does not back up that assessment. People that say it's a disincentive, it just, there may be instances of it here and there, but on an overall level, the data just doesn't back it up. In the month of June, 70% of the people in the United States that did go back to work went back to work to make less of a weekly paycheck than they were getting on unemployment. And as we look in August, we haven't really seen the unemployment numbers drop that much, even though the $600 is no longer there. Now, you would think that if all these jobs were available and people just weren't going because they were making up more on unemployment, when that went away, everyone would go back to work. But we still have almost 1 million people a week apply for unemployment all the way through August. The issue is that the jobs aren't there, and the jobs aren't there because of the pandemic and because of the spread. And so once again, we need to do more to get help to people so they can pay their rent, so they can pay their child care, they can pay their utilities. But we also need to get control of this damn thing so we can get people back to work safely and let those jobs open up. That's the solution here.
I was listening to one economist who was of the opinion that, you know, the CARES Act and the measures that Congress did come together on so quickly and pass early on really did keep the economy's wheels turning as much as they could through that situation, that it was actually pretty successful.
I agree with that. And that's kind of what we should be doing. We should all be pulling together and working together in a situation like this to help one another get through it. You know, everybody's really... Look, I'll be honest with you, Casey. My job is heartbreaking sometimes.
Yeah.
It's absolutely heartbreaking. I hear the stories of people every day. I'm worried about getting evicted. I have to email you from a hotspot because I can't afford my cell service anymore. Right. I'm worried about losing my car. I'm living in my truck. We're trying to help so many people. And while we're doing as well as we can, and frankly, we're one of the better states in the country at these things, there's just so many people that you're going to get folks that get into that situation.
How many New Mexicans right now are unemployed? Can you give me a number?
It's come down a little bit. I think we're over 100,000 still on the list. So we're still in a situation where we've got a lot of people. It's definitely in the six figures. We are, though, seeing somewhat less people apply every month. We are seeing a slow but steady decrease in the amount of calls and people calling our office every week. So it is getting a little bit better every week, but it's slow. It's slow, and I'm just, my plea to New Mexicans is please wear a mask. Please socially distance. Please don't go to Labor Day parties. If you're going to go in a restaurant, please take this situation seriously. The more you do that, the more we can get people back to work and avoid these absolutely heartbreaking situations.
We only have a few minutes left, Bill, and I did have another off-air question come in about penalties for employers, and I'll just read this to you verbatim. Penalties for employers who were cheating the unemployment numbers. She had seen this at her job, and penalties for otherwise abusing the system. So I'm not sure exactly what that might mean, but maybe you would have a better idea.
I'm not sure what the specific question there is.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm sorry. I just don't understand the question.
In what ways could employers somehow manipulate this system? And would there be any...
If people aren't reporting their wages and therefore paying taxes into the unemployment trust fund, that can happen. If employers are sometimes paying in cash rather than a check, therefore they wouldn't report their wages and therefore they would get out of paying taxes, and that would really get them out of their obligations to pay into the unemployment tax system. That could be something that folks are talking about. And then wage theft. You know, we also are responsible in our department for investigating employers, complaints of employers who either aren't paying the minimum wage or are mm-hmm. paying people in cash and not doing their jobs, that sort of thing. So those are some of the things that this might be about.
When was the next minimum wage increase due for New Mexico?
It should be on January 1st of this upcoming year, or it'll go up to $10.50 an hour.
And that's still on the table?
That's still the law, yes, ma'am.
And coming up in January, obviously going to be a very, very important session for the legislature. And because it's almost 1:58, we don't really have time to get too much into that. But what do you think New Mexico lawmakers' top priorities will be in terms of helping jobless New Mexicans in the new year?
Well, I think people are going to really worry about the budget. I think they're going to worry about making sure that our schools have the resources that they need to stay open so that our kids can get back to school, which is good by itself, but that our parents can do a more complete job getting back to work. I think it's going to be one of the biggest priorities. And then making sure that, you know, we've got the resources to fund all the things that government does and does well. I think you're also going to see, for instance, cannabis legalization on the hopper. I think that's something that is, for anybody that knows me, I sponsored that bill in the House of Representatives for many years, and so support that as something that's going to come anyway, and it can give us some more revenue that we need for really important things. Things like that are going to be very important, but I would just stay tuned and I would talk with your local legislators. They're very, very accessible about what your priorities are and hear from them about what they're looking at.
And a quick note on, we've just barely touched on the oil and gas industry. What are jobs looking like in that industry at this point, and what does its near-term future look like?
Sure. I mean, that's a complicated question, but in 30 seconds or so, there was a very high supply of oil and gas in the country at the beginning of the year. When you saw people stop driving, that oversupply continued. And so that's really contributed to kind of some of the lower prices and maybe some of the harder issues during this COVID situation. I will say the price is kind of stabilized, and it's at about $43 a barrel. I check it every day because it's really important to state finances. And so if it can stay above that $40 a barrel mark, it will really help the state in terms of the overall budget picture. And it'll help get some more people overemployed on the southeast side of the state.
And meanwhile, obviously, New Mexico continues to work to grow its green energy industry. Have we seen real job growth there yet?
We have, and we start, for instance, we just started an apprenticeship program with Affordable Solar, which is a company up in the central part of the state, and they're going to be actually starting, I think, this fall with a bunch of new installation of big-time solar panels in an industrial-type setting. Furthermore, Pattern Energy, which is a company that is going to be building a lot more windmills in the Corona area, as well as a bunch of new electricity transmission, I think they want to hire about 1,200 people in the next couple, 3 years. So we are really starting to see an increase there.
All right, Bill. Well, it is 2 o'clock. Workforce Solutions Secretary Bill McCamley, thank you so much for sharing your thoughts and insight with us today.
Casey, thank you so much. For everybody out there, please wear a mask. Please socially distance. Please don't go to parties this Labor Day weekend. If we do all those things, we can really work together to get the economy back on track. Thank you so much.
Thanks for joining us. And thank you to engineer Jacob Lockwood for handling our callers today and for putting this all together for us. And NPR News is coming up next. Oh, and Tony Porras, too. Thank you, Jake. Yes, Tony on the board. Thank you so much. And Leora Zeitlin is coming up right after NPR News with Intermezzo by request.